A reading from Paul's letter to the Corinthians. For the message about the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, God decided through the foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks desire wisdom, but we proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those who are the called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. For God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. Consider your own call, brothers and sisters. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, things that are not, to reduce to nothing things that are, so that no one might boast in the presence of God. He is the source of your light in Jesus Christ, who became for us wisdom from God, and righteousness, and sanctification, and redemption, in order that, as it is written, let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. The word of the Lord.
It was interesting to think about this. I was reminiscing about this. It was in 1985 on a Sunday evening at Brazilian Nazarene Church. My first sermon was 32 years ago. And I remember practicing. It was a Sunday night because they wouldn't let us young ones preach on a Sunday morning. So those, you know, you just preach to the old people on Saturday, Sunday night they came to church. And I remember practicing a lot, and I nailed it. Just nailed it, did everything perfect. And I was so excited, and my dad closed the sermon out. He closed in prayer. It was in tears because he was so proud of me. So 7 months later, I was asked to do the sermon again, and I was cocky. I thought, man, I am the next T.J. Jakes. I'm the next Billy Graham. I know how to do it. And so during that Sunday evening, I get up there and I said, good evening, my name's Kevin Robertson, I'm the youth director at the church. And I started with my opening illustration. I was about 5 minutes into it, and then all of a sudden I went, totally forgot what I was going to say. Now, therefore, the tremor decides, we're going to get out of here. And so my tremor starts kicking in. I get really nervous, and all of a sudden my body temperature gets really raising up, and then all of a sudden, with a tremor, I'm doing this. And you look at people in that panic look that you have, and they're looking back at you in that panic look too, like, we want to help you, but we don't know what you're going to say. And so, therefore, then I figured it out. Then I went for another 10 minutes and went completely blank again. It happened 3 times in 15 minutes. And I remember when I finished that sermon, I was so humiliated. Because not only that you make a mistake, but make a mistake in front of people. And so when you sit down, now this doesn't bother me as much. Like last night, total disaster. Because last night I'm sitting here where I usually sit. He's started singing that beautiful Spanish song, and I picked up my sermon, and I go, ready to go, good evening, and I open my sermon, and I go, that's the sermon 2 weeks ago. And I just went up, and I go, I brought the wrong sermon. And so you just got to be very honest. It's interesting how none of us like to blow it. None of us like to fail. And so what's interesting, if you look at the cross behind me, somehow we have romanticized the cross in our Christianity, in our faith. That basically we have beautiful necklaces that are gorgeous that we see someone wearing and say, what a beautiful cross. But we understand at the beginning when we first, what the cross was meant to be, it was a tool of execution. It's like me wearing electric chair around my neck or a little gas chamber around my neck, you would go, what's with the sadomasochism on the chest there? But that's what the cross is sometimes. In fact, it was invented to be the longest, torturous, painful death in humankind. And this happened to people that would go against the Roman Empire that day. And so if you look back on the screen, it says there was no pride in being crucified. Absolutely none. So I looked at this New Testament reading today in Corinthians, and there's two phases, two words that stick out. Follow me on verse 23. But we proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to the Jews, a foolishness to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Now there's a little phrase in there that says stumbling block. That the cross is a stumbling block. And so if you go like, man, the embarrassing moment being in front of people, I don't know about you, but have you ever fallen in public? And you pretend you didn't fall? And there's times that you fell and you got all your limbs are just bleeding now. And you get up like, well, I'm fine, you know, no, you're not, you're bleeding, no, I'm fine, you know, I see you three different ways, but I'm fine. Because we're so embarrassed, aren't we? Because that's a humbling experience. And so then I'll understand what's a humbling experience, because of my disabilities, it happens frequently. That if you look on the screen, stumbling blocks cause us to stumble. Stumbling and falling is a humiliating experience. It is a blow to our pride and ego, but that is why we need stumbling blocks. Our overgrown egos, the pride that results, is the biggest obstacle to spiritual restoration. Now, I talk to many people that have struggles with addictions or former addicts. It's interesting what they tell me. They say, at my lowest point, when I lost everything, somehow they talk about that as a blessing in their life. That when they were at the lowest point of their lives, they all of a sudden realized there's only way up, and I'm going to go up. And so I didn't understand that. I didn't get how all of a sudden your lowest point of your life eventually can be the biggest blessing. But Richard Rohr says this, and I'll put it on the screen. He uses a term called following upward. You don't follow down. You fall upward. What does that mean? You fall upward, and I'll put it on the screen too, to God's amazing grace. See, when you're stumbling and when you're falling, you fall up into the grace of God. That's where we understand it, that we really experience the grace of God. Now, for me, in our society that we live in, that I've heard this. When somebody gets a new car or somebody gets a new job, we say this, man, you deserved it. You've earned it, right? So in our society, we have this earning mentality, like you deserve it mentality. And I got this to reward myself. You know, we can create wants into needs real easy. Somehow I just created a need that I'm an environmentalist and I need a Model 3 Tesla. I've created that in my head. This is a need, not a want. And so therefore, I deserve it, I earned it, or whatever that may be. But here's the problem with that. When you have that mentality, then you have a mentality of entitlement. And when that entitlement comes, you don't experience the gratefulness because you think you've earned it. And so therefore, when you don't experience, therefore when we have, it's a lack of joy in our lives, when we think, this is what I have, and we compare ourselves. You never compare yourself to another country. You compare yourself to some podunk 21-year-old, 31-year-old Britney Spears or whatever that has every financial thing you want. And you say, this is what I need. And so what happens is pride comes before the what? The fall. So true. In fact, if you look back on the screen, grace offends our pride. That is why we need stumbling blocks. Often the only way to find grace is stumbling and falling into it. It is only when our pride is removed that we can begin to rely on God's power, not our own. Now, if you look at this, this is interesting because he says the stumbling block is for the Jewish people and for the Greeks. Now, you have to understand, when he's sharing the gospel, Paul, to the Jewish people, they could not grasp it, because what was going on was they're going, why are we going to accept this Messiah that got killed by the Roman Empire? We don't get this. This doesn't make any sense. Because they wanted to be freed from the Roman Empire. They didn't want to be crucified anymore. They were done living under the submission of this authority here. But yet, except Jesus, follow Jesus, he was killed by the Roman Empire. And then when you look at the Greeks and the church and the city of Corinth was a pagan Greek city, and they took pride in themselves into intellectualism. And because they used their brains so much, it was hard to grasp to live on faith, to follow a Messiah that was Jewish and they were Greek. Because basically, they were getting executed by the Roman Empire, and they did not want, this was crazy thinking in their life. And that they wanted to be the elites. They wanted to be the big time people. Now, when I was at a conference in Temecula, you know, two of the bishops were talking to two of the largest pastors of the church, and two of the thing, and I go, that's elite group right there in the denomination. And I went, ooh, I was like a three-year-old, you know, because you don't want to, you want them in that group, but you don't want them in that group. It's really weird how we do things like that. Like, it would be nice to be one of the elites. Ain't going to happen. But when we look at this, this is what Paul says about us having a desire to be with elites, the desire to fit in to success. It says this, for God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom. God's weakness is stronger than human strength. Considering your own call, brothers and sisters, not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many of you were powerful. Not many of you of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in this world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and the despised in this world, things that are not, to reduce to nothing things that are, so that no one might boast in the presence of God. You know how many people quoted this verse when I first went in the ministry? You're called to misery. He's choosing the foolish. That's you. And they were serious because of the tremor. And I was going, dang, dude, okay, I'm called to ministry, but you don't have to put me in that category, which I'm in that category. And so the church of Corinth, again, we want to be the elite. We want to be this, but we realize God doesn't call the elite. God calls the humble. Look back on the screen. These were not lofty people who were high in society. Therefore, they did not have as far to fall. When the cross was put before them, it was not a stumbling block for them. It was not a foolishness to them. The cross was God's news, the good news, and not bad news for them. See, sometimes people ask me, dude, what is with Jesus? Why is he so against people having money? Why is he against rich people? Because that's all he's talking about, the camel in the eye and all that stuff. And it's not necessarily, he's not against rich people. He's not against wealthy people. And he's not against highly educated people. Which is good, which is fine. But if you look back on the screen, when it comes to understanding the good news of God's grace, the humble have an advantage over the proud here. The poor, the powerless, and the humble already tend to know their need and what it is to rely on God's grace. They know what it is like to have to rely on each other, so they are more likely to give grace. The wealthy, powerful, and prideful often do not know their need for reliance on God's grace. They have learned to rely on their own brains, efforts, money, and power to meet their own needs and solve their own problems. They often do not need to rely on others, so they are less likely to give grace. You see this in our culture. You see this in the United States. The more powerful you are, the less grace they show. It's amazing if you think that. But when you see somebody that has been poor, that has been struggling a lot, they understand what grace is. They understand what forgiveness is. They understand the true meaning of the cross. See, look on the screen. They understand the cross because they already carry a cross. They understand that when God became one of us, he did not identify with the prideful, he identified with the humble. It is in the humble, self-sacrificing love that grace is released, and it's only in humble faith that it is received. Now, this is the problem. We in America struggle with pride. We in America struggle with individualism, self-sufficiency. Even it's carried over the church. Like, how big is your congregation? How big is your budget? How many books have you written? Well, the question is, how many books have I read? But we won't get into that. And so, written, you know, it's not going to happen, you know? And so the thing is, or what size is your annual budget? And I have to be honest with you, it's so easy, even in the church, to get caught up in the successful mentality on how much and how many do we have. How much? How many do we have? And I had to, and the thing is, there's time that we have to, for me, I have to figure things out. It's all about me. Now, I shared with you a few months ago that somebody gave a prophetic word to me, and I'm kind of giving you increments of it. And when the person was giving me the prophetic word, I was trying to figure out how to do it under my own strength. And the person that was giving me the prophetic word said, God wants you to stop trying to figure it out. And that scared the bejeebers out of me. And the person said, follow him with a humble heart. Don't try to do it under your own strength. And that was powerful to me. Because again, that's against our society. Because I need to know. I need to have all the answers. And so here's what's fascinating here. Is I've learned, my mother brought me up to never, ever play a victim. You're not a victim. And I had tremors in my hands. I had a bow-legged. I had learning disability. I had a whole shebang. But she taught me never, never to play victim. And so she would not put me in special schools, get me in the public schools, and that's good. But what happens, you learn self-sufficiency. Now, none of you probably ever thought, how does Kevin cut his fingernails? Both of his hands shake tremendously. Have you figured that out, how that would work? That's self-sufficiency. That means what I have to do, I have to calculate every single body movement, how I lean, how I do things, and work a way around my brokenness to cut my own fingernails. I have to figure that out. Everything that you do naturally, I have to figure out mentally how to do things, store that in my head, so when I do things in public or do things, I know when to retreat. I know how to do it. I know how to be self-sufficient. And so being self-sufficient is very hard then, because what happens, you produce pride. Even through your brokenness, even through your things. And so this is where Kevin doesn't ask for help. So when my wife goes, hey, can I help you with that? You know, because she sees me struggling. I go, no, I got it. I got two people in this church, I wish they were here, because I would pull their names right out. That all of a sudden, when I'm eating lunch with them, they'll pull my plate and pull it towards them and start cutting my meat for me. I'm pissed. And the reason I'm pissed is because what does this look like now? I'm a kid that can't cut his own food. But man, deep down, I'm as grateful as all get out because now I can eat it without worrying about the tremor kicking in. Do you see how the struggle happens? And so we don't like to ask for help things. And so this is where it requires in the last 4 months for me to experience humility and to ask for help outside the church to say, I've got to be restored. I've got to do this. See, if you look on the screen, to accept help is an admission that I can't do it myself. And when somebody helps me, there's no entitlement. There's no pridefulness in there. Because it's a gift. And that gift is love. And so when last year, that basically the Lord said, you've got to stop trying to be so self-sufficiency. You've got to depend on me in every area of your life. I think I'm vulnerable, but I'm really not. I'm vulnerable with the stuff that I trust you with. Because I can manage my own image. And so you manage your own image too. And so you can come across vulnerable, but you're not. Because I throw stuff out about me that's safe. And so we have to be very careful that our church does not become a self-sufficient church, that we don't become little individual islands. And so therefore, the stumbling blocks in our lives, and this year, last year, has been a tremendous stumbling block, is what your pastor has been doing is falling up into this grace. If you look on the screen, stumbling over the cross is a good thing if it causes us to fall into grace. We must become a church that's not scared to fall, scared to fail. But the thing is, when we do fall, we're closer to kneeling, aren't we, if you think about it? And kneeling is a submission, as a sign of humility. And so, man, there's where, man, that emotional energy that we project is, man, it's part of it. And so this is where we find restoration is through humility. This is my big old stanza in the last 6 months, is restored in order to be restored. And how we begin restoration is through the spirit of humility and through the stumbling blocks that we face in life. And that, as Richard Rohr says, that we fall up into God's grace. See, back then, if you look on the screen, for many of the Jews of Jesus' day, the cross was a stumbling block that became an obstacle to faith. For us, the cross needs to become a stumbling block that helps us to fall into faith and onto grace. If you don't stumble over the cross each moment, our pride begins to take over. Our ego is getting out of control. Our own wisdom gets mistaken for God's wisdom, and we lose the opportunity for salvation, restoration, and wholeness. Instead, we become fixated on the trap in our own folly that we call that folly wisdom. Stumbling onto God's grace helps us to stay walking humbly with our God. Only then can we be restored to be restorative work for justice and mercy. Now I know God is calling this church to constantly fall up into God's grace. By constantly falling up into God's grace, we're going to see individuals restored. We're going to see marriages restored. We're going to see dreams starting to be restored, because many of us have just stopped dreaming, have given up our dreams because of our circumstances in life, or we believe someone can't do it. And so when God reminds you of your passion, and I don't believe, you know, whoever you voted for, I honestly believe this election has brought up so much passion. That is God bringing that passion up in you, because that's what you're built to do. That's who you are. And so, therefore, when we can believe that we can change a community, and as we change a community, we can change a city, that we can change a country, just by being obedient and believing in what God says about you. See, if God is going, it's on the screen, if God is going to use us to bring justice and mercy to others, God first has to help you learn to walk humbly with him. Then that is where restoration starts. Lord, make us humble. And so if you look at your connection card, and let me tell you, hopefully you guys received my email that after the service, if you guys want to stay, I'm really going to share with you on the next 24 to the 36 months where we're heading. There's going to be some changes that are going to happen. And I'm going to share that because instead of throwing out in the sermon for you guys to listen to, I want questions back. I did this with the Saturday service. I did this with the 9 o'clock service. And it was really powerful on both ends. And so coming to an understanding. And this is where your pastor is really going through the spirit of humility. Now, that sounds like a prideful statement in itself if you think of it. I'm humble. But moving forward in a sense of being obedient to taking steps of faith, to asking for help, to follow the Lord's guidance in the next 24 to 36 months for me as a pastor of this church. So if you look at your connection card, it says, Lord, make me stumble over the cross, not as an obstacle to faith, but to fall into faith and onto your grace. Help me to stay humble at your feet so that you can lift me up. If that's your prayer, I would love to respond. We pray for you guys on Tuesday as a staff. And then after the service, after communion service, if you'd like to just move forward and join, it's about a 12-minute little presentation and then Q&A after. May God bless you and may God bless his word.